Hey, it's Wednesday, and it's time for Ham Nation. Tonight, we're going to wrap up Quartz Fest. We've got the solar update from Dr. T, and we have a tale from the transmitter site that will leave you speechless. I don't envy George's job, and you won't either. That's all coming up next, right here on Ham Nation.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode number 387 for January 30th, 2019. Quartz Fest wrap up.
It's cold outside. Underneath all of this, yes, but it's cold. We're in Belleville, Illinois, across the river from St. Louis. It's 7 degrees. You are tuned in to Ham Nation, and we're not making all this up because it's cold. But it's going to be 50 here over the weekend, so I don't know what's going on. But I thought I'd let everybody know that we're suffering the cold, but we're making it okay. But let's see what else is going on. Gordon West, you ought to be in your shorts or something. How are you? What are you doing?
Well, it was cold at Quartz Fest. It got down to about 33 degrees one night. But I'm going to make up for it by next weekend, not the Super Bowl weekend, but weekend after this, going to the Orlando Hamcation. So I hope to see all you in Florida, where we can then devour ourselves of all this stuff and get nice and warm. And then a week after that, I'm in Yuma, Arizona for that ARRL Ham Fest. So lots of activity out here, Bob. Hope you get warm.
Oh, we're getting the car all loaded up for the Hamcation also. What's happening down in Mississippi, though? George, are you cold? You warm? What are you guys doing?
Well, I think it got down to the mid-20s here last night, so pretty cold. Right now, it's 38 degrees, and that's bone-chilling cold to us here, but we're looking forward to the weekend because I think it's going to get up near 70, which is a little unusual to be that warm, but we'll take it.
Absolutely. And what's going on with you, Don Wilbanks? Are you cold?
No, it's not that cold. It's not frozen. It's only 44 degrees. I just like doing this. That's all. Hey, hi to our WTWW listeners on 5085 and 15810. If you'd like to email WTWW and get your ham radio stuff on there, email at WTWW.us. Of course, Bob has his theater organ show on there, and there's the QSO radio show, and they give you amateur radio newsline, and of course, the audio from Ham Nation. WTWW, you ought to check it out. Definitely check it out. And email at WTWW.us is their email address. So we're going to have a good show tonight. We've got video from Dr. Scove going to talk to us about the sun, Bob. It's going to be awesome, as always.
Well, we look forward to all of the things that you put together, especially with Dr. T. Boy, what a brilliant lady, and her reports are always wonderful. Well, before we really get into it, I've got a couple of things I want to share with you. We had a really really great ham fest here in the St. Louis area. It happens every year called the Winter Fest, and we'll get into that in just a minute. But I want to remind everybody what's going to happen Friday. It's the AM rally, and I really hope that you can join us. We're headed down there tomorrow so we can be in Pleasant Hope. And there on the screen are all of the dates and the times. And you really want to take advantage of this. If you've never worked AM, push the AM button on your radio and talk to us. You'll be really surprised. It's just a fun thing. But remember, we want to stay in the AM window always. And that's very important. And if you go to the website, amrally.com, there's a lot of stuff on there, and it'll give you the all of the frequencies and things that are going to happen. So I look forward to seeing you there. We'll catch up. I'll have different rigs on, the Harvey Wells. I'm going to have the pine board on Saturday afternoon, Saturday night. So you'll hear us. There's lots of people on there, so join us. Well, I want to share with you what happened at Winterfest. It was really good this year. They hold it in Collinsville, Illinois, just across the river from St. Louis and up the road from us. And we'll go through these slides real quick. I appreciate Jim N0JSN. He took these pictures and sent them to me. The first picture is, punch up the next slide, Vic. That's my friend Ed. We're on 160 meters just about every night on 1940. We put a little display up of some of our stuff. And then there's Jim in the background that took the pictures. And there's our old buddy Cliff in Carbondale, Illinois, in K9JTS. And the next one is very, very interesting. Check out his grandson's shirt. That is Michael, the tube guys, I call it, WB0SND. But that's his grandson. Now, check this out, guys. He just got his technician. And because of all of the government thing, he can't go further with that yet. He'll get it. But he's copying 20 words a minute.
Wow.
20 minute. This kid is a genius at CW. I'm so proud. And I know Michael is. And I had to put this picture up because this guy's going to be something to behold. So got to be real proud of that, Mike. And congratulations. There's my old buddy, Tim. Tim is a good friend from way back, K9CQ. He also is a friend with Valerie and all the guys up mid-state. He's from Jacksonville, Illinois. It was good to see him. And there was the club. I'll be speaking there tomorrow night. That's the club that I grew up in 1956, the St. Clair Amateur Radio Club. We're going to do a thing there last for them. And there was a little bit of the display that I did. And we had a couple of dealers there. But, I always like to support them. Associated Radios in Kansas City, really a good dealer, I have to tell you, and good guys. West Mountain was there, had a lot of their stuff, and the crowd was heavy around their booth most all of the day. And then there was BridgeCom. They're down the road from us in Missouri. They built a really neat 220 repeater, BridgeCom. They're in Joplin, Missouri, and always nice to see them. And there was a display that we had set up on the other side. This is of the parametric receive audio system and getting great reviews. And a lot of guys are starting to be able to hear the radio once again. And boy, good stuff. Look at that. SX-101 and an HT-37. It just doesn't get better, guys. I mean, this is it. And a lot of that good old stuff there. But check this out. Ed came and got me. He said, Bob, you got to leave the booth. You got to come here. He goes over, and here's a guy that built the pine board on breadboards. And what he did, I think the next picture I did the article. Yeah, this is an article from 1929 QST of how to build that on a breadboard, an actual breadboard. And you saw the transmitter before. So just good to see all these guys getting back into building. And, of course, the pine board giving the idea. But here's the last slide. Gordo, what does every ham want? They want free. Look at this. Everything in this guy's booth was free. I thought it was great. So
I'm for it.
Yeah, isn't this neat? So I thought that was wonderful. Well, we had a good time there, that's for sure. And they have a lot of things going on in the club, and it's just wonderful to see all my old buddies. That's one of the reasons I go, because some of these guys I grew up with back in the 50s. So that was the Winterfest. But Gordo, you had a much bigger and better fest out there in the desert. How about telling us all about Quartz Fest?
All right. Well, thanks, Bob. No, I wouldn't say it was better. I think any Hamfest is the best. And at Quartz Fest, this was the best part. You'd be walking around and look down and find actual pieces of clear quartz on the desert floor. Well, let's go ahead and jump right into Quartz Fest. This is the 23rd annual. We scored over 1,000 attendees on the desert floor. You can see our rigs way in the background. And you could get to Quartz Fest either from the main road via back trails. Here we are on one of the little skidoos zooming along and, of course, tuned into the UHF link to Quartz Fest. Or you could take your small rig and drive down the nice, almost paved road. And it rained and rained before we got there, delayed the tent setup. But as you can see, it wasn't mud, just dry sand. Campers, we had all sorts of campers. Again, 1,000-plus attendees, hundreds of RV rigs, but the campers came out in storm, and they pitched their tents. They put up their Arden mesh networks. They had their solar panels out. They were rolling. And good thing everything was tacked down because Monday, Tuesday, the wind came in about 40 miles an hour. And as you can see, everything had a little lean to it. Well, some of the vehicles were a little bit larger than other. And this kid comes up and comes out there. And, well, you know who he is. He had the shirt, Ham Radio. It's a contact sport. But it was also the weekend of the VHF-UHF contact. And Gary, seen on the left, a little off my photo here, but that's Gary on the left, and that's Ray Novak on the right. But, you know, Ray, what a good guy. He wasn't there to push ICOM. He was there just to push having fun on the VHF-UHF contact. In fact, Gary was sworn to secrecy, wouldn't even tell Chris, the Quartz Fest organizer, that Ray Novak with ICOM America was on scene. Good job, Gary. Heston kept everything absolutely under wraps, and you can see by the smile. Ray's rig spouted that big, tall antenna, and that antenna did a fabulous job in getting many new grids, and we were sort of in a rare grid, so VHF and UHF was alive and well, especially with the new 9700 and all the other great rigs that we found inside his cabin. There were others on the air as well with their equipment and their loop antennas, and we made a lot of nice contacts on the VHF-UHF weekend last weekend, and that's the mesh network, and we were very excited to see Don KE6BXT show off what the Arden network is all about on microwave. Well, greeting the Quartz Festers were our two Quartz Fest men and women, and we had greeters there at the welcome sign and table, and everything was computerized as in years in the past, where you would just type in the call sign if you've been there before, and zingo, all of your information came up. And that's all thanks to Tracy Lineker with the great Mountaintop Amateur Radio Association, MTARA. Tracy had about 30 of his members there from the Lake Arrowhead area. And there's Tesla, and Tesla's looking good as well. But thanks so much, Tracy, for all the great computer work on registration. And, of course, the wind system, IRLP at its best, was there. And they had free coffee every morning before the sun came up, so it was a very popular booth. Everybody walking around with their portables, this one little Ellicraft, he was doing both voice as well as CW, internal batteries, and he made several hundred mile contacts. This was our special event station, and Tom and Gloria Luther, as well as Zargon with a big antenna, helped get W7Q on the air in grand style. And as you can see, we have a piece of quartz holding up one of the ICOM rigs and a blanket on the other. But you know who made the most contacts? The ladies. Yep, they absolutely cleaned our clock, guys. They were out on the air more morning and afternoons and just did a fabulous job at the W7Q. Now, they had a distance challenge, and that was sponsored by the Arizona DX group. And the distance challenge was like 9,000 miles was a further contact at 100 watts on portable. But the best part of Quartz Fest is just sort of the cantankering and all the fun things going on, and everybody had a great time. Our special event station was run by the BioNO Power Batteries, and BioNO loaned us a 100 amp hour battery, and this is what it looked like before they put the shell on it, and that's a protection circuit, so if we shorted it or overcharged it or undercharged it, it would behave itself properly and not damage. They even checked it out, and look at this. This is the performance of a lithium iron phosphate BioNO power battery, and that voltage just held constant, and the rigs never complained, and there was a couple days that we didn't even have the solar panel hooked up, and you wouldn't have known it. That's the 100 amp hour on the left-hand side powering all sorts of rigs that we brought in, mostly the ICOM America rigs. And there was the BioNO Power solar charger, and we found out that solar panels out at Quartzsite did a good job, but not great, because it's January, and the sun is still pretty low on the horizon. This is Dave, and Dave did a fabulous job of showing off the Flex Radio. Dave in X6D had his whole set up, and he too agreed that in the wintertime, solar panels that normally put out 5 or 6 amps were just barely doing 2 or 3 amps, and you had to work at it. But nonetheless, we always stayed charged. Dave and Tina Brimmer, they were working with Susie in 6GLF, And we held a W5YI VE session that attracted, how many did we have, Suze? 35 out in the desert floor, and the exams went smooth. We had about 20-plus new technician class operators, a lot of upgrades coming on. Dave and Tina have tested with us all the way from Mexico to Alaska. Wow. That's Captain Neil, W6FOG, and Neil provided a little bit of Moog synthesizer music, and you can see his setup. And that's the neat thing about Quartz Fest. Nobody holds back. They just bring the stuff. They don't worry about the sand. And that's Russ. Russ and his team led the Hootenanny. It was one great Hootenanny at sundown. And that's Roger Dean, and Roger's with Wired Communications, Roger and Kim. And he played this drum, and Roger, I forget what the heck you call it, but it had different tones as he would beat on it, and he was right in time with the Hootenanny. Well, there's Chris, our fearless leader, and Chris did a fabulous job, many times running hundreds of miles to get tables and more canopies and more chairs, because this thing absolutely grew from 600 to 700 people to well over 1,000 in just a couple of years. So she was very busy. This is the ladies' tent, and let me tell you, those ladies had so many things going on that it was just great to see all the ladies having a great time. Antenna Walkabout and the Solar Walkabout, led by fellow hams, always have had a problem that we couldn't hear the presenter or the one whose vehicle we were looking at. So what they did this year was on 146 even, they would transmit, and everybody brought their little handhelds, and everybody could hear easily as long as they remembered to bring their HTs. Ray finally came out from under wraps. And again, I tell you, what a great guy. There was no commercialism at Quartz Fest, certainly not from ICOM America. He was there just having a great time. And as you can tell by Ray's smile, it was nice. And it was shirt sleeve weather. Well, here is our fearless leader, and that's Chris and her new wife, Lynette. So, Chris and Lynette, thank you both so much for organizing this. Next year, we're hoping to have even more and more leadership joining them to act as all the runners, because the rest of us, we had a fun time just running around meeting the great people. Well, we had to bail out that afternoon and get up to Southern California because this past weekend, of course, was Winter Field Day, and we visited the Orange County Amateur Radio Club Field Day site. And here it is again, another U.S. Towers, very lightweight crank-up tower. And it was dead of night when we finally got there. We spotted the tent. And we knocked on the tent, Orange County Amateur Radio Club leading this effort. And for Winter Field Day, they were nice and warm on the inside where the rest of the country was down in the teens. Computer logging, great operators from CW to all of the voice modes. Not all of them, the voice mode. And that's Chip Margelli, K7JA. He's got the headset on there and calling CQ on 20 meters, and they racked up a lot of points. So the neat thing about Quartz Fest is just all of the camaraderie of the hams. I wish I had more time to meet all of them, but it was a fun 5, 6, 7, 8 days on the desert floor, and maybe we'll see some of those same hams in a few more weeks for the upcoming Yuma Ham Fest, February 15 and 16, and maybe I'll see some 3,000 miles away weekend after the Super Bowl weekend, and that's the upcoming Orlando Hamcation. So we'll take off our coats and have fun, and we'll see you all in warm territory. So, Don, what's going on with you and all of your activities, Don?
Oh, great stuff from Quartz Fest. That's on my bucket list. One of these years, I'm going to have to make it all the way out there. It's definitely on my bucket list. Well, let's see what's going on with the news of the week, amateur radio-wise, with Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2152, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, January 30th, 2019. Up first, an update on the DMR radio battle between Motorola and Hytera.
The U.S. International Trade Commission's ban on the import of numerous models of Hytera DMR radios and repeaters has taken effect. The commission's action came after a determination last year that the Chinese radios infringed on numerous Motorola patents. The order, which was issued in late 2018, took effect on Wednesday, January 16th. A statement from Hytera noted, "The main takeaway remains that Hytera's new generation of I-Series DMR radios do not infringe on any patents, and we will continue to be able to offer our entire product line in the U.S. Hytera is suing Motorola for what the company calls anti-competitive conduct under the Sherman Antitrust Act, claiming it is waging a campaign to exclude Hytera from the market. It called Motorola's action, quote, inappropriate litigation. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Andy Morrison reporting, K9AWM.
For a full list of DMR radios affected, please listen to the full edition of this week's Amateur Radio Newsline report. Hams are packing their suitcases and making plans for Hamcation in Orlando, Florida.
The international event is being held soon, from the 8th to the 10th of February. The Central Florida Fairgrounds and Expo Park turns into one big ham shack for those days as the action gets underway. Sponsored by the ARRL-affiliated Orlando Amateur Radio Club. Hamcation is also hosting the ARRL Southeastern Division Convention. According to the event website, forums will be held on Friday and Saturday at the Lakeside Pavilion. The subjects will include the Digital Dilemma, D-Star, DMR, or Fusion, Flex Radio, Software-Defined Radio, and the ARRL Collegiate Amateur Radio Initiative. There are also discussions for home brewers, IRLP fans, and history buffs who want to know more about the secret Enigma codes of World War II. To learn more about the 73rd edition of this event, which is coming up fast, visit the website hamcation.com. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jack Parker, W8ISH.
There's going to be a lot of partying going on, radio style, of course, in Westchester, Ohio.
The National VOA Museum of Broadcasting in Westchester, Ohio, home of the Westchester Amateur Radio Association, WC8VOA, is marking the 75th anniversary of the VOA Bethany Relay Station this year. This milestone is being celebrated with a four-event series conducted jointly by the museum and the Midpoint Library System. The series is called The Voice of Truth in America, celebrating 75 years of the VOA Bethany Station, and underscores the power of radio during the active years of the station's shortwave broadcasts. The series kicks off on March 6th with a talk by Steve Herman, the VOA's White House Bureau Chief. This series is among the dozen free events being held this year inside the VOA building. Others include the annual Hamvention Nights at the VOA Museum on May 16th, 17th, 18th, and 19th, and a program on July 11th discussing stealth antennas for radio amateurs who live in communities with HOAs. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, N8WB.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. With Andy Morrison, K9AWM, Jack Parker, W8ISH, Stephen Kinford, N8WB, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3, we'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
We say goodbye to Region 2733 as it fires a few parting flares before disappearing out of Earth view. And a massive coronal hole rotates into the Earth strike zone. Will it bring us another solar storm? Those stories and more in the news this week. Space weather this week has gotten very exciting. It all began with Region 2733 that grew very rapidly in Earth view. It's been firing off a bunch of little flares, including a mid-C-class flare, which is pretty surprising considering its solar minimum. However, this region did not fire any Earth-directed solar storms at us, and we've been watching it as it's slowly rotating now to the sun's backside. We will continue to watch it on the sun's backside, though, to see what more developments might occur. Meanwhile, we've got this massive coronal hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone here in the next day or two. The last time we did a dance with this coronal hole about a month ago, it brought us up to storm levels, and it could do so again. We are definitely expecting aurora at high latitudes, and we could even see a bit of aurora at mid-latitudes for just a skosh. Switching to your M-flare threat meter, you can see we've been extremely low when it comes to the X-ray flux, and therefore by proxy, the solar flux continues to be low. However, right around the 24th, about midday, you start seeing that X-ray flux rise up. That is the influence from Region 2733 as it started growing very rapidly on the Earth-facing disk. You can see it firing off little mini flares, and then on the 26th, pow, it fires off a C5-class flare. We thought it would launch a solar storm when it did this, but nope, it stayed kind of quiet, and after that thing settled back down. And then as that region rotated towards the sun's west limb, pow, it fires off another set of C-class flares, and it's continuing to do so even as it's rotating around the sun's backside. So you amateur radio operators and emergency responders, if you've been wondering what the static and the noise is on the bands, it's the sun. It's woken up from hibernation a little bit. The nice thing is it's boosted the solar flux so that radio propagation is well into the marginal range, and it looks like we're going to hold on to this for a few more days. Switching to our solar storm conditions, you can see the last time we actually had some decent activity was late on the 23rd. We got hit by some fast wind from a coronal hole that we've been dancing with since like last August. It bumped us up to active conditions, and then late on the 24th bumped us up to storm levels just for a short while. It wasn't enough to bring us any decent aurora down to mid-latitudes, but high latitudes got some gorgeous shows over a couple days before things began to settle down. Since then, things have settled down, and well, they've settled down a bit more, and well, they've really settled down. This is about as quiet as it gets, folks. And meanwhile, we are now waiting for this new coronal hole that's rotating into the Earth strike zone. It's going to be sending us some fast wind here very shortly, and it could bump us back up to active and maybe even storm levels here in the next day. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are anticipating the hit from that fast solar wind from the big coronal hole that's rotating into the Earth's strike zone. At high latitudes, NOAA is expecting minor storm conditions with up to a 55% chance of a major storm. At mid-latitudes, we're only expecting active conditions with about a 25% chance of a minor storm. Now, these conditions at high latitudes could easily last through the weekend before things begin to calm down. At mid-latitudes, we're only expecting one, maybe 2 days of sporadic activity. So aurora photographers at mid-latitudes, man, I don't know if you're going to get any shots. It might be worth taking a look, but you're going to catch them fleetingly, if at all. So the space weather is getting very exciting. Even though we've had to say goodbye to region 2733 as it rotates off of the sun's west limb, it is still firing off solar flares, which is giving us a great show, and it's boosting the solar flux. So amateur radio operators and emergency responders, you guys are still enjoying some marginal radio propagation. Now, I know GPS users, well, you guys may not be quite so happy with all the solar flares firing, but these are reasonably low-class solar flares, so you probably shouldn't be having much issue when it comes to reception. Now, on top of this, we have a massive coronal hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone here in the next day or so, and it promises some gorgeous aurora views at high latitudes. Now, aurora photographers at mid-latitudes, well, these shows are getting a lot more fleeting for you guys because, well, we're at solar minimum and the wind just isn't all that strong anymore. But there is still a good chance to catch some decent aurora if you stay on your toes. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Thank you, Dr. T. Always good to have you on the program. And, of course, you need to follow her on Twitter. I say it every week because I mean it. Twitter, at Tamitha Scove. Up to the second information, she's always on there. It's almost like 24/7 she's on there because you'll see her tweet in the middle of the night four or five or six times sometimes if things are really popping. So she's a good follow on Twitter by all means. And she also has a YouTube channel, Tamitha Scove, and you can check her out at spaceweatherwoman.com as well. Well worth your time. Right now, let's hear a word from ICOM, speaking of well worth your time.
Listen up, hams. Soon, ICOM will be releasing the new IC9700. It's the latest transceiver bringing direct sampling and software-defined receiver technology to the VHF and UHF arena. You're going to want to keep this rig on your radar. The IC9700 is packed with features including all-mode tri-band covering 144, 430, 440, as well as 1200 MHz, center design style 4.3-inch color touchscreen, dual watch operation, and full duplex operation in satellite mode. Smooth satellite operation with normal reverse tracking and 99 satellite channels. D-Star providing digital clear audio and internet-capable communications. Digital data mode providing 128 kilobits per second data communications. Look for the new IC9700 coming soon.
Attention all hams.
ICOM knows that ham clubs play a big role in bringing ham communities together to learn from their peers and industry leaders. As a way to give back and help you on your mission, ICOM has launched a promotion exclusively for U.S. ham clubs and the ham fests they're involved with. By registering your club, you could win ICOM swag, a Skype presentation for your club, or your ham fest, an ICOM booth setup. Register today for your chance to win at icomamerica.com/hams.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to icomamerica.com/hamnation and register to win. You could win great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats each week. And you'll be entered in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. For January, that's the ICOM IC2730A dual band dual watch mobile. It's got a large LCD display, 50 watts on VHF and UHF. It does VHF, UHF, VHF, VHF, UHF, UHF, simultaneous receive. It has weather alert built in. There's an optional Bluetooth board available. And there's free downloadable PC programming software. So go to icomamerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And by the way, this is the last week you can register for that particular radio. They're going to be giving it away. Well, tomorrow is the 31st, so get your entry in now and after each episode. Well, you know, the first part of 2019 was looking like a pretty bumpy ride for me here. I've got some tales from the transmitter site tonight that will just kind of, well, it'll make the kids in the audience say, that's what I want to do when I grow up. I guarantee. Maybe not. Anyway, this particular event, well, it started sometime last year, at least probably the 1st of November, maybe before then. We started at one of our FM transmitters just popping off the air. It only happened at night, and not every night and not consistently, but every now and then it just pop off the air for like a second or so, and then it would come back on. A few seconds later, the same thing. And then it would quit, and no issues. And never did it during the day that I know of, only at night. So I reported it to the local utility, Energy, and I don't know if they did anything or not, because, you know, they never call you back and tell you, hey, we fixed the problem. I just never heard anything back from them. And it continued to do that intermittently. And, well, December 31st, you know, we did a live stream here. We had Amanda and Jeff on and a bunch of other folks over at Amateur Logic, and had a big time. Stayed up kind of late that night. And we started getting some rainstorms here and some torrential flooding. It just started up last day of the year. And so we had a lot of rain here for several days. Well, January the 1st, I get woke up early. We have a T1 line that feeds from our studios over to an uplink site where it sends, you know, via 950 megahertz links out to six different transmitter sites, the audio. If this T1 fails, it takes all six stations off. Well, it failed. Fortunately, I've got internet back up there. I had to intervene, though, and turn it to the internet and get that going. But anyway, that's how I kind of started out the new year. That night, this particular FM station I'm talking about started popping on and off the air again, just like I had described. But then it quit. You know, every time I would point my truck in that direction to head off to see if I could catch it, it would stop. So, you know, I didn't waste a trip because it was so intermittent. I didn't know that I could find it. And it's, what, 26 miles away. So the next day, Wednesday, January 2nd, it started doing it again. So I got out my spectrum analyzer here in the shack, hooked it up to an outside antenna, and tuned in on that station, and I watched it. And what I noticed happening is I could see the FM carrier right there on the spectrum analyzer, and whenever the station would pop off, the carrier was sitting still. It was the same strength, didn't change at all. But what I noticed is a modulation dancing around on the edges of that carrier would disappear, as well as we have a subcarrier sitting out there, 57 kilohertz, for radio data. You know, that's what puts the title and artist on your screen. And I could see that subcarrier in there. That's just part of the modulation that the FM signal's broadcasting. Well, every time I'd hear the station go off, we'd lose all the audio modulation plus those subcarriers. Well, I just see it drop right out. So I knew something was up with the modulation. The transmitter itself, it was fine. All these transmitter sites we control by remote control, and I do it with a telephone. I punch in a DTMF code, and I can get the meter readings, various parameters on the transmitters, the plate voltage, plate current, power output, reflected power. I can turn things on and off and do all of that with the telephone. The telephone line connection has been hit and miss at this particular site for the last year. It'll go down. I'll call AT&T to repair it. They'll get it back up. But it's always got a hum in it, and it's, I've had several failures with it. I'm about to replace it with something else as soon as I can figure out what that is. Maybe Exceed Satellite and a Magic Jack, or I think they call that Viasat now. But I was called in on the remote control, and I was, you know, checking the transmitter readings and watching that spectrum analyzer and listening off the air. And the remote control would hang up every time that I'd see that modulation drop out. At first, I was thinking, there's something going on with this remote control line, and it's turning the transmitter off. But after I saw the modulation drop, I knew then that it had to be something else. I've got a few photos here we were going to look at. First, this is a site. It's a 750-foot tower. The FM antenna is there at the very top. There's a rack out there. You know, the transmitter is three-phase power. And like I say, the carrier was sitting solid, so it looked like there's no problems with the free three-phase power. However, there's a rack of 110-volt equipment out there that that's what was popping off, the best I could deduce remotely. Now, those relays across the top are part of an interface to a standby transmitter. The panel below that is the dial-up remote control. The little thin panel below that with the two push buttons, that's a controls for an antenna transfer switch that I built. And I didn't build the switch. I built the panel. And the bottom piece there is the studio to transmitter link, the 950 megahertz receiver that receives the audio. That rack was going out because the remote control would fail, as well as that studio to transmitter link. So I knew that was going to be something to do with it. But it straightened itself up and had no more problems the rest of the night. It was still pouring down rain. As a matter of fact, the rain even picked up on Thursday, January 3rd. I decided, that was the next morning, I'm going to put a UPS on that rack there. And then if this 110-volt just blips out for a moment, at least that'll hold it up till, you know, I can figure out what's going on here. So that Thursday morning, I took out the UPS, hooked it up, everything in the rack. I said, okay, you know, maybe I can sleep tonight, won't have any trouble out of this. Well, it was not to happen. Around 5 p.m., there's the UPS right there. Around 5 p.m., we were still having torrential rains, and I had a dead carrier on the air. We lost all the modulation, and I turned on our backup site. I have another site that has, you know, a lower power transmitter that I can put one of our FM signals on and gives me a little coverage around town, but you couldn't hear it because the main transmitter was still on the air, and it was... it was swamping out my backup signal. I knew the road had flooded out there, and I had to get back into the site. Somehow, I had to turn off that main transmitter out there because it wasn't receiving any modulation, and we were just covered up with a dead carrier. So I decided to hike in there. I had my rubber boots, but I didn't have a good rain suit, so I stopped and got one of those and an extra flashlight, and armed with that and an umbrella and my 9mm, I headed out to the pasture. I parked and I had to hike in about a quarter mile through the muddy road in the cow pasture to get to this site. When I got there, what did I find? Well, and it's pouring down too, you know, and we just won't go into it too much, but I got in there. The UPS had died. It had run down the battery completely. And I was thinking, wow, you know, I just put that in there. What could, maybe it's a defective UPS or something. Well, no, that's not really what happened. It had lost power. And I had put in a brand new power strip to plug that UPS into because I wanted to run it off a different wall outlet, suspecting maybe that particular branch was bad. Well, if you look at that surge pressure there, right around that reset switch, the red light was on. It looked like there was power there. And that was throwing me off. But I finally measured it. No, there was no power. Right around the edge of that switch, you'll notice a little soot kind of peeking out there. Well, there was no voltage coming out, so opened it up. And right there on the inside, it was smoked. Brand new power strip. I had blown up the surge suppressor in it. So whatever was going on out there was, it was pretty nasty. And I knew it was, but just didn't know how nasty. So there wasn't a lot I could do that night except shut down that main transmitter, so at least you could hear a backup site. I decided I'd best just shut off everything there. It's no need to risk it. As the kind of damage that I'm seeing there in the power strip, there's got to be something going on. So I started kind of looking further into the electrical circuits, and, well, I found something here. I thought, maybe this could be the problem right here. There were ladybugs that infested one of the wall outlets there. And I said, maybe they're shorting out up in there or something, although I didn't smell anything burning. So I got a vacuum out and sucked all of them out. And no, it wasn't the ladybugs. That didn't solve the problem. So I looked a little further. I took the cover off the breaker panel. When I looked inside there, it was not a pretty sight. There was some burning that had gone on some of the buses in there. And there were several breakers that just kind of acted flaky. They did not feel right. As a matter of fact, if we look in a little closer, there's one of the posts for one of the breakers. There's some kind of little crystallized metal particles stuck to it. But that's not the worst spot. Right here behind one of the three-phase breakers, you can see there was some burning going there. Now I'm doing all this by flashlight because I've shut off the power. And that's a 100-amp three-phase breaker there that's going to a surge suppressor. You know, actually, here's a photo after we had taken it outside and we could see it a little bit better, pretty well arced up there. The surge suppressor, here it is right here after being removed. Now, it should have only had a 30-amp breaker on there. I don't know why someone had put a 100-amp breaker on it. But you can see a little soot kind of coming out around the edges of it. I opened it up, and wow, it's split the potting material in there. It's all arced up, pretty nasty looking. So here's a road. You know, by now, this was a Thursday night. I think I hiked out of there about midnight. So I knew Friday, the way the road was looking, I was not going to be able to get an electrician up in there and do anything about this. And fortunately, the rain had just quit. So I'm thinking, all right, it's Friday. So maybe Monday morning I can have an electrician come out here and we can look at replacing this breaker panel. Well, I called around. I found an electrician someone recommended to me. So I called him and got him lined up to come out Monday morning. Oh, and by the way, this is January 4th. Now, the T1 came back on for a few hours and then dropped back out again. So still facing that problem. Monday morning, the electrician called me. He's not feeling very good. He thinks he may have the flu and he's not coming. So I spent all day Monday with no electrician. So I went around town looking for parts to see if I could find, you know, maybe some of the buses that go in this particular breaker panel at one of the electrical suppliers. I knew there was one place that sold used parts and maybe they would have one. But nope, couldn't find any parts. So I wasted Monday. I called a friend of mine who he's also a broadcast engineer, but I know he does a lot of electrical work, and asked him if he wanted the job of replacing the breaker panel. And he said, yeah, he'd like to do it, you know, if I would come out and help him. And I said, well, sure, you know, I'll help you do it. So we made plans to go out there Tuesday morning and get started on it. So I called Energy. And, you know, I told them at this point I needed to have the power disconnected because, well, we had a breaker panel burn up. We're going to have to replace it, and we need the power off in the interim. So they came out. They disconnected the power, and you can see on that pole there's the fuses that are folded down. That's where they disconnected. And I told them what was going on, that the three-phase power seemed good, seemed no issues with it, but the 110-volt circuits were crazy, and I thought there had to be a neutral or something bad somewhere. So they took their bucket truck, went and looked at that top wire on that pole. That's the ground wire. Well, the ground wire runs up the pole, connects to that. That's the neutral line. It was broken. So they repaired that. I said, well, good. Now, maybe when we get our breaker panel replaced, we found the issue, the original issue here, and we turn it back on and everything would be happy. But I had my fingers crossed on that because I didn't know if that's the way it was going to turn out. So anyway, I got a list of the parts that I was going to need, and I headed over to Graybar because, you know, that's a big electrical distributor there. And I thought, well, I should have everything I need. I knew the panel that I had, you know, I wouldn't be able to get it, but I'd be able to find another three-phase panel. Turns out they don't keep any in stock. It has to be shipped in from Atlanta and wouldn't be there till the next morning. So I gave them my order, got all that lined up. Now, you know, this site has been off since January 3rd, and it's now January the 9th, and I'm just now getting the parts to repair it. Fortunately, I had that backup site. We're still on the air at reduced power. So we removed the old panel Wednesday morning, and we noticed something strange. When we got the panel out, you know, I'd already seen some arcing there going on the buses. I showed you that. On the rear of that panel, where the conduit goes through the wall to the meter base on the other side, there's some arc marks right there. And there were matching arc marks inside the meter base. So something had arced there. And I don't know if all this started with lightning or what happened, but there was some nasty stuff had been going on out there. So from there, you know, we started putting in the panel. We got the new panel kind of, you know, temporaried up there just so we could see where it was going to go. Everything's, you know, in a different place in it than the old panel. None of the wires will reach now. So we're going to have to rewire the whole building to get things going again. All right, so that puts a little more delay. That means I got to go back and get more parts before we can really do anything else. So I leave my buddy there mounting the box and, you know, doing whatever he could and head off to get some more parts. And, well, I did get some more parts. And now it's Thursday, January 10th. So we're working on installing everything. And we take a break that night because, the Beatles are in town, and this is the only break I had during the whole thing. If you ever get a chance to see Liverpool Legends, that is a great show. These guys nail it. I mean, the Beatles could not have done this show live. Well, mostly because the technology just wasn't there then, but these guys did a great job. George Harrison's sister Louise put this together, and boy, what a great act. Check it out if you can. Anyway, so I needed more parts. On Friday, I got more parts, and we got most everything reinstalled. And I called Energy and said, hey, you know, I need y'all to come turn the power on. We've been off out here, you know, since January 3rd. We've got the building rewired. We're all ready to go. If you call your man back out, by the time he gets here, we'll be ready. And they said, well, we can't do that. You've got to have a permit before we can turn your electricity back on. First I've heard of this. You got to get a permit from the city. Okay, so I call the city, and, you know, it's like 4:30 in the afternoon now. The city says, no, that's far enough out. We don't do inspections on that road. You got to call the county. Okay, so I call the county. The county says, we can't take a credit card, though. You've got to have cash or check, which I had neither with me. And it didn't matter anyway, because by now they were getting ready to close the office, and there's no way I could have got an electrician there anyway. And it's Friday afternoon, so no way to get it back on without that permit. So we finished up what we could there for the night and headed out. On the way home, I did a little deer hunting with my new truck. It's not new. It's a 2015, but it's new to me. I've only had it a few months. And although I was probably only doing 20 miles an hour when the deer jumped out, it did about $3,000 worth of damage, and I've got a $500 deductible. So there's that. That's a whole other thing. That's just, you know, now it's January the 11th, and 2019 is not looking like such a good year. So went through the weekend. Monday came back out. I had got a permit then. I went down to the permit office. I wrote them a personal check for $85 and got the permit. Later that afternoon, the inspector showed up. We talked to him a few minutes. He looked around. He put a sticker on the side of the box and said, "Okay, you're inspected." That's great. Now we call energy. They say, "Okay," but they never show up. So that's Monday. Well, we tightened our final connections we had left and cleaned up the site. Now, we're still using flashlight power. We've been working, you know, out here since the 3rd with only flashlight power in the buildings, and it's cold in there too. And fortunately, Jeff had this little propane heater that he had brought, so we had a little heat in there. And, you know, it was getting on, well, it was Monday night now. We just wanted to get finished. So I had some little 25-watt screw-in bulbs. They'll fit a regular trouble light socket. Actually, they're 50 watts. So I ran a cable out and hooked it to my truck battery. And now we had real light in the building, 50 watts worth, to finish off the job. I cranked up the truck every now and then, you know, to top off the battery because, well, you know, you don't want to run down your truck battery. And it had been muddy. You saw photos of the mud earlier. And so every time I went into this site, I put the truck down in low gear four-wheel drive. And I just drive into the building. We'd do our bit. I left it in four-wheel drive low. And because when I left, I knew I was going to have it to get back through the mud and get out of there. Well, apparently I didn't crank my truck up quite often enough. The battery ran down. Fortunately, I had one of these little lithium-ion jumpstart batteries. Those things are amazing. If you don't have one, you ought to get one because they'll do it. There's no way it looks like it would, but they will flat crank a truck and nothing flat. Anyway, we've got more rain that has happened here in the meantime. But I got the truck cranked, headed on out, and wait a minute. I'm stuck in four-wheel drive low. I can't get it out. I you know, turn all the proper knobs and everything, and it's not coming out of four-wheel drive, and the display looks a little funny, too. I don't want to turn off the truck because, well, the battery was dead, you know. I want to be sure I can get out of here tonight. So what do you do? Well, you drive home 26 miles at 25 miles per hour in four-wheel drive grandma gear. And I got home. All right. So Tuesday, energy showed up late in the day, and they reconnected my power. And, well, we were back. We had power on, three-phased, looked fantastic. No problems there whatsoever. However, that didn't solve the issue. The 110-volt problems were still there. And, you know, energy had just, they had shown up and turned on the power before I got there. So I called him up and I said, "Look, you know, y'all just turned us back on. We've got everything, you know, right here. We're sure about that now. And we're still having problems with the 110 volt. The three phase is great." And they say, "Well, we need to do some more testing." So they came out Wednesday. And now, you know, we're up to like January 16th And this, you know, this site has been down since the 3rd. It's getting to be a pretty long year, and it's just starting. So Wednesday morning, that's when they turn it back on. I still have a problem. They didn't show up till Thursday, that was Wednesday. They came out. They did some testing, and the lineman they had there just happened to be there at the right time to see the 110-volt go squirrely, and the three-phase stay fine. And he traced it from the meter base, and he actually measured it up on the pole and saw it do it there. And then it straightened out, and there were no issues. And he said, well, we've got to do some more testing. I know you just rewired this whole building. So the only thing it can be, because we don't see anything up the line that's bad, it's got to be those transformers. And I agreed. I said, yeah, it's, you know, that's the only thing that's left. So he said, well, we'll have to do some more testing out of the transformers replaced. All right, that was on, when did I say that was? That was on Wednesday. All right, so I called Energy on Thursday. I didn't hear anything from them, so I called them after lunch. And I just wanted a status update on it. Now, mind you, you just can't call down to the local office. You're calling some 800 number to somebody who's reading from a script. And I told them, you know, we've had this issue, and here's what's going on. And they looked, and they said, okay, well, we found no problems. You need to reset your breakers. And I explained to the lady that, we reset our breakers. As a matter of fact, we replaced them and everything else out there. You know, we rewired the whole thing. There's a problem. So after calling around to Energy a few more times and getting a different person each time I called in, I finally got someone who said that they would escalate it. And it looks like that the transformers needed to be replaced, but there was nothing else on there except that on the ticket. Meanwhile, pours down rain again. The road is really getting rough by now. It's January 17th. The next day, it's Friday. So I call Energy. I get the same runaround, same thing as before. Finally, they call me back around 4 p.m. wanting to know if the problem was corrected. Well, everyone I had talked to so far that day had said, it just says here the transformers are going to be replaced. But it never said they had dispatched anyone to do it. Well, so when they called me at 4 on Friday, wanted to know how everything was, I said, well, as far as I know, I got the same problem, you know. Nothing's been done about it. And they said, we've replaced the transformers and the fuses and the switches 45 minutes ago. And that's the first I had heard of it. Well, I told them, I would check it. And I couldn't get out there. You know, the road was really bad now with all the rain. And it was Friday evening. And I said, I'll just go out there on Saturday because it was coming down. Well, severe thunderstorms on the AM of Saturday the 19th. Finally, by 3 p.m., the thunderstorms quit. I went out there, and I managed to get in, and I saw the new replacement transformers on the pole. What a beautiful sight to behold. I checked all the voltages in the building. Everything looked good. The 110-volt even looks stable now. Here's a photo of our new panel that we had installed. So I checked, you know, everything on all the breakers in it. They look good. So I put the cover back on, tested all the equipment, tested the auxiliary transmitter. It looked good. So I put the main transmitter back on the air, and that is a lovely sight there. 99% power. We're all back up. We're on the air. I have received no more calls from that site since. Everything's been running smooth. So all the issues were apparently either in one of those fuses or in one of those transformers. And I think it was probably the center tap somehow came disconnected or intermittent inside the one transformer that, splits it out so we can get the 110-volt circuit. So anyway, What a rough story. Here's some photos here. Well, you know, we got an emergency generator there, but I couldn't really use it because my breaker panel was burnt up and we were replacing it. So I just put the generator in the stop position because I didn't want it sitting there running needlessly. It knew there was no utility and thought it should crank. So at the end of all this, you know, I turned the generator back on. It's Saturday, January 19th, and this side has been off since 3rd, but it's back on now. Put the generator on automatic. It immediately cranks. It doesn't transfer, but it cranks. And I try resetting everything. It still wants to run. So I just put it back on stop, and I said, all right, this is Saturday. Monday morning, I'll call the generator guy, and I'll let him come look at this because I don't see anything. Anyway, he did, and he found a bad exercise clock that apparently went out during the middle of all this. Now, here's where energy had come into the site to get up to that pole. You can see it's pretty soft there, pretty mushy. Turn around and look the other direction. That's how it looks there. So, you know, I couldn't even got in there without a four-wheel drive. Pretty doggone muddy. Side of my truck there. You know, you can see I've splashed up 2 weeks' worth of mud there, caked under it during all of this. So I pack up, get out of there. I say goodbye to the neighbors. And I get the heck out, man. Fortunately, we're back up and working now at that site. And that's just, you know, some of the glamorous activities you can look forward to as a broadcast engineer. And, you know, you don't have these events like this happen every day, but every now and then you'll get something, some kind of catastrophe that'll last a week or a month or more. And it kind of reminds me of why I quit doing this 20 years ago. But anyway, I'm back doing it now.
And oh, folks like, boy.
Folks like Don sitting up there, you know, they're just, you know, twiddling their thumbs, looking pretty behind a microphone.
Yeah, and I'm out there. I can't play my records. Turn the transmitter on. I can't play my records.
Exactly. So anyway, that's back. That's working now. I am glad it's back.
Well, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
The Beatles? The Beatles were great, man.
No, just think about it. Other than that bit of bad business, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you enjoy the play?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'll explain to you. Yeah,
just like this. But I got stuff to give away, Don.
You know, I bet you do.
Yeah, an old breaker panel. If anybody's in need of a slightly used breaker panel,
I've got extra crispy.
Yeah, or a deer. If anyone needs a deer, you know, it's a little ripe by now. You know, it's been a little while. But, you know, this past weekend was winter field day. I didn't get to operate it because we went to the Jackson Capital City Ham Fest here. I saw you there, Don. A great time.
That was fun.
But it all falls on the same weekend as winter field day, so I don't get to operate winter field day, but I saw a lot of people did this year. And I asked a question, you know, last week on Ham Nation, what was the first winter field day? And I had, well, a number of folks answer it, but the lucky winner is Richard DePoss, K9WWW. And he said, George, the first winter field day was sponsored by the Society for Preservation of Amateur Radio, January 13th and 14th of 2017. So congratulations, Richard. We've got the perfect accessory here for your next winter field day. It's a DX Engineering Sport Bag, a great heavy-duty canvas tote bag to put your winter field day or regular field day supplies in, and your clothes and whatever you need there. You're going to enjoy that. DX Engineering will be in touch. And for next week, I've got another prize here. And, you know, with surges kind of being on my mind right now, and I still don't know, was that a lightning strike? And that's you know, it hit the tower and that's where it decided to go out, was through those transformers? Or did it come in on the electric line? We'll never know the answer to that.
Maybe one of my commercials played over your station and that's just what arced the whole system out.
That is very likely. A good possibility.
Could be my manliness. Just burn the whole thing up.
Could be. Well, I've got something for your manliness here, Don. This is a MFJ Guardian Angel 270 surge suppressor. They are great to put in your coax line, not on your 100 kilowatt FM, but on your ham rig. These will suppress surges, minor lightning strikes, surges and all that might come down your transmission line if you don't disconnect your antenna when you've got the possibility in the area. This one is good, for 400 watts PEP. They also make another model good to 1,500 watts PEP. DC to 1 gigahertz. So covered, most of what you want to do. I've got one of these on my dual band rig. I've used one for years. Never had a lightning strike since I put that in there. I did have one before, but anyway, if you'd like to win that, then answer this for me. And it's, you should know the answer to this. When troubleshooting electronic equipment, what is the first thing you should check?
Run!
Yeah. If you know the answer to that, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com. You might be next week's lucky winner. And now we've got a short video here from Randy K7AGE that he and Gordo, I don't know if Gordo's in this video or not because I haven't had a chance to watch it, but it's some of the special events and the prize drawings at this year's Quartz Fest.
Roger, Roger. I'm here on Quartz site with 1 watt.
Well, it's working very good, ground wave. Thank you very much. What's the handle?
The name here is Ray Romeo Alpha Yankee.
Thank you, Ray. I have you logged in. This is Whiskey 7 Quebec, QRZ. CQ, 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 Whiskey 7 Quebec. Whiskey 7 Quebec calling special event station, Fort Sight, Arizona, and listening. Kilo Golf 5 Mobile. QSL on the 5 and 5, 5 and 7 from San Antonio, Texas, mobile. I have you 5 and 5 also, 5 and 5 here in Arizona at Quartzsite during the special event station during Quartzfest. QSL? You drive safe out there and thanks for that contact. 7-3, this is Whiskey 7 Quebec, QRZ. Whiskey Charlie Delta.
Whiskey 4, Whiskey Charlie Delta. And there's Walt Whiskey Oscar Lewis Tango.
Very good, Wilt. I have you here 5555 into Arizona at Quartzsite Special Event Station. Whiskey 7 Quebec, QSL.
Whiskey 7 Quebec, this is 4 Whiskey Charlie Delta back. If you're in the Tinglehead to South Florida, what's your special event for?
The special event is for the ARRL Quartzfest. Quartzfest special event station out here in Quartzsite, Arizona. We have a festival here. It's all week long with seminars and rides and events. And we do have a few other sponsors here that are bringing their radios and show them off for the first time that before they go out on sale. So this is in Quartzsite, Arizona for the Quartzfest ARRL. And this call station, Whiskey 7 Quebec, QSL.
Okay, 7-3,
thank you for the contact. This is Whiskey 7 Quebec, QRZ.
We reached 1,000 here in attendance by Friday evening. and that qualified us for the 9700. The winner will not receive the radio until probably the first or second week in April. Here it comes. She's shaking them up. It starts with a K. Seven. Romeo Echo Sierra. Come on out. Come on over here. I want to get a picture of you. Shake, Ray, shaking your hand. This is the worst part of Quartz Fest because we have to tie the ribbon on it. But we'll be back next year. What are the dates for next year?
19th to the 25th.
Very good. And you didn't even have to look at your smartphones. Thanks a lot for coming for the week. Thanks a lot for coming out here.
Boy, Quartz Fest sure looks like a lot of fun, Gordo. And I would love to make it 1 year instead of chasing around out behind the cows at the transmitter site. You know, Randy wants to see your photos, no videos, of what you've been working on, you know? What you've been building, soldering, wrenching, or drilling. Send your photos and a description of what you've been working on to Randy at K7AGE at Outlook.com, and he could have you in a future episode of Show Us Your Project. I think he's working on some right now. So K7AGE at Outlook.com. Amanda, I'm going to let you wrap it up here. I feel like I've been rambling on for about 2.5 weeks now.
I actually think you have. No, I love this story, though. Jeff comes around the corner here, though, and he looks at me with this. He's watching on his smartphone, right? And he's like, I don't envy George at all. That sucks. So yeah. I think a lot of people felt that way for you. But I can't let you off the hook yet because there was a lot of conversation because you mentioned Cat 11. And so explain what Cat 11 is.
Who mentioned Cat 11?
You did not?
No.
No?
There's a lot of Cat 11 going on in the chat room, though. I don't know where they
got
that.
There was. So I thought that you mentioned it in your video, and I thought maybe I missed it in transition. So none of us know what it is. I Googled it, and it said something about that's for LGE or excuse me, LTE lines or something like that. So now I feel really
talking about somehow related to the T1 line failures, which, by the way, I had two or three T1 failures during all of this as well. It just adds to the excitement of the moment.
And then somebody in the chat room said
Cat 11 was brought up in the chat room. Yeah,
it was. And I thought that maybe you had mentioned it, George. Maybe you had a Cat 11 failure. So I apologize. But and just saying T1. Okay.
Had I had a Cat 11, it would have failed too, I'm sure.
It probably would have. Okay, moving on. I do have an honest question here. Gordo, this one's going to be for you. How does copper-clad aluminum wire compare to 100% copper wire regarding its use as HF antennas and ground radials?
I think the ohmic difference would be so minor, up to 100-150 watts, that you'd almost have to go by weight, and more than likely the aluminum is slightly lighter. I would have to be very cautious about the connection, because remember the old days of homes wired with aluminum under a different metal screw, creating a difference of potential corrosion. So I would, for outside, I'd maybe really get together with an antenna expert that is a metallurgist that could tell us the difference. How's that for a no answer?
I love that no answer. That works really good. Let's go for another no answer. This one's going to be for George. All right. WB5ORT Ed has this question. He says, it seems that with playing around with some of the Arduino stuff and the I2C bus, that the CIV ICOM communications might be based on that or have some common roots? Do you know or think of some common roots in this communication protocol?
You know, I wish I did, because I like to play around with the Arduino stuff. And I have often wondered what they're using, you know, to talk back between the rig and the head. And it might be I2C. I just don't know, and I wish I did.
Another good non-answer. Okay, we're doing great. Okay. I did want to say, a couple of us have been getting some questions about Valerie. And I just wanted to let everyone know, I reached out to Valerie, and Valerie says that she has been swamped. First of all, if you don't know what she does as a profession, she's bookkeeping, accounting. So, and she's taken on a lot more of that lately. And in January and December, at the end of the year stuff, she gets extremely busy closing up the books for the year. So anyhow, she said that she was hoping that she would be able to be on at least once a month right now until her schedule figures itself out. So everyone, look forward to having Val on again. Don't worry about her. She's doing just fine. And she wanted to say hello to everyone. So
good.
Absolutely. And the only other thing I wanted to talk about before I go into the nets is, don't forget, TWIT always has a yearly survey. So please check out the TWIT survey. You can go to twit.tv. I'm sure Victor would be happy to show us a link to that. Fill that out.
twit.to/survey19.
There you go. Or just go to twit.tv and you'll find the link right at the top of the page. And you can take that real quick, like, helps them figure out how they're doing and what shows we like and which shows we could do without, or what we'd like to see otherwise on TWIT. So there you go. All right. For the nets tonight, we're going to have the 75-meter net on 3906, and they're going to try out the 40-meter net on 7192. We're going to have D-Star on 14 Charlie and DMR on TAC 311. I do not believe that we're having an Echolink net right now. So with that, that's all I have. I don't know who's wrapping this thing up.
I don't know.
Don.
It's the man.
Is it me? Okay. Well, why not? Tales from the Transmitter. Epic stuff, George. Just, and that's why, yeah, I never wanted to be an engineer. Exactly why I never wanted to be an engineer. I don't envy you. And man, sorry about the truck. That is horrible.
Sorry.
The dogs. And it's great to see you in Jackson.
She thought that job sucked too. She said, it's not for me.
She wants a leg of George's deer. That's what she wants.
That's all right.
All right.
Where's those antlers?
All right, we've done about as much damage tonight as we can possibly do. So join us again next week for even more mayhem here on the Ham Nation twit.tv internet program. So good night all, 73, and for Bob, who had to skate out early, we will all see you next week. So 73, good night.